Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 400, part 3 of the big birthday bash, the return to the Whiffin. If you've not listened to part 1 and part 2, what are you doing? This is no time to join a party. Everyone knows you join a party at the beginning, you pay attention and make notes until the end so you can follow all the storylines of the party. Thank you for tuning in. As ever, we're brought to you by speechdevelopmentrecords.com, which is where you can head to get the beautiful vinyl that we talked about in part one. You can support by going over to patreon.com/scroobiouspip. I've not really mentioned that on these big birthday specials, but it's another way to support if you fancy putting in some or chipping into the calls. But yeah, let's get on with part three. It's, you know, drinks are flowing. It's starting to get messy. Opinions, we'll be honest. We will rib each other. So brace yourselves and enjoy. Let's go. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces.
Cups want some.
Well, that's a weird way to start.
For many people, that isn't even a name.
Just start with Stu saying, and Cub Swanson. Welcome to part three of the return to the Whiffin, the big birthday bash. And you know we always end up talking about MMA at some point on these things. Let's talk a little bit about mixed martial arts. And let's start with...
Fucking hell. Really.
It's got to be the starting point. Conor and Dustin.
Oh, fuck him. Fuck Dustin. This, Conor should have won that fight, right?
Genuinely, this will be, I think, of appeal to people who are MMA fans and people who aren't, because it's a discussion of just the media in many ways. So my thought on the Conor and Dustin match was, it was a shame it went how it did.
Yeah,
because for those who don't know, Conor McGregor lost because of a doctor's stoppage. His shin got snapped. There's been endless armchair analysis of when it snapped and what happened. But equally, people have been in uproar about what Conor said post-fight. Stu, you and Blake discussed it on the MMA Fan podcast, which I can't recommend enough. My view was the UFC are in the wrong for putting a camera and a microphone in someone's face when they've literally just snapped their ankle. Anyone who's listened to this podcast for a while will know I'm no Conor McGregor fan anymore. Mm-hmm. Out of us three, I was one of the earliest to be like, I'm not interested anymore. This guy's done my head in.
I'd agree with that.
I kind of turned on him because I think he's a bell end. But the example I kept coming up with was, it's kind of a cliche that when women are giving birth, they'll say the most horrible things about their partner. You know, it's kind of it's an overdone thing, but it's real because they're going.
All pregnant women are like Conor McGregor. I'd agree,
but no, they're literally going through a physical trauma.
Yeah,
so it makes you emotional. Conor had just literally snapped his shin in half. He's literally in the midst of trauma. He's not in you know reacting to it or whatever else. He's literally going through physical trauma. And he said horrible things about Dustin's wife. He said horrible things in general. He made excuses. But he shouldn't have had a microphone and a camera in his face. And for me, I don't want to see Conor and the UFC together anymore because I can't trust them. I'll go into that further. This is a monologue now. Thanks for attending
my TED
Talk.
Do you want our input first before we go into that?
No, I don't.
No, no. Because I'm going to keep reading.
No, because I know that you've got a view because you wanted to talk about it. But,
yeah,
but
sure.
The thing that gets me is I don't trust the UFC and Conor together. We discussed when Conor threw that thing at the bus and it was horrible. Yeah. It was a real... People forget that it was a period where people was genuinely saying this is a dark period in MMA. This is sad. He could do time.
It became a WWE parody. Right?
That's it. It became a thing.
There was legit fighters with fights about to happen that got... Injured.
Ruined. Injured. Yeah. Proper glass in the
fucking eyes. I made it clear I didn't want your opinion at this point.
But, oh, sorry, my bad.
no, yeah, completely. There was people injured. There was trauma. It was an embarrassing thing. Yet now, every time Conor fights, that is in the promo package. And the UFC at the time were like, and Dana were like, this is disgraceful. He's going to be out of the UFC. I understand him coming back into the UFC. I get that. But what I can't accept is, or I can't trust the UFC and Conor together anymore. Because the argument for allowing Conor to go on the mic when he sat on the floor with a snapped leg was he wanted the mic. Again, I don't give a shit. You've got to protect the fighter in that situation. And two, it's Conor McGregor. It's good business. And I don't think the UFC can be trusted anymore to be a sport when it comes to Conor McGregor.
That's the thing, isn't it? Is that, like, your brother used to list these fears many years ago. And it's not clinically the best fight and the best. And when we got into it all those years ago, which you introduced me to, I'm talking to Pip. Yeah.
Because we didn't even know Stu back then, right?
Mate, that's like 20 years before we knew Pip. Mate, I was watching, if you go and watch the Backstreet, you know Kimbo Slice fighting.
Yep.
We're in the background of that, aren't we? Cheering him on.
You look in the background and Chris is doing spin kicks while Kimbo is fighting nobody's.
I don't know. Like, I think that... Oh, I've lost my point because I'm a bit pissed. Sorry, you got to help me here.
Conor has been responsible for the UFC becoming a much, much, much bigger organisation.
Conor and Ronda. People seem to forget what Ronda did.
I'm not taking nothing away from Ronda.
No, you are, because you've got I hate Ronda t-shirt.
Yeah. But,
I hate women t-shirt.
But I know lads that... If I said, like,
I love when a point starts with "I know" and then a burp. I know, you know, it's going to be quality. I know that.
No, but if you mention UFC to people, generally that conversation will involve the word Conor McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
Not that common will it involve the word Ronda Rousey. Maybe 5-6 years ago, 100%.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's a lot more people watch UFC now. When Conor fights, whether you call them casuals or whatever,
mm-hmm.
they want to watch Conor because he brings 100%. What you said about entertainment.
I'm a casual.
What you said about Joe Rogan, like, kind of crouching down the octagon.
And again, I'm not even putting it necessarily on Rogan. I've got a lot of love and criticism for Rogan these days, but in that situation, he would have had someone in his ear
100%.
Saying, go over to Conor. In the moment... And a lot of people hated on Rogan because he said previously, I don't want to interview people who've had a concussion or whatever else. And then he did that with Conor. But I think it's easy to pile on Rogan. I think the Rogan haters and the Rogan fanboys.
You know, Dustin said, go speak to him. You know, like, by the way, do you remember Dustin said, speak, like, Rogan asked Dustin a question and Dustin looked at Conor, pointed him and said, speak to him. And also, sorry to override this conversation somewhat, because I agree with what you're saying. Don't interview someone who's under trauma. But what's he saying? What's Conor saying now? I want to hear what Conor's got to say in 3 months. Because if he's still saying the same unclassy shit.
He did some angry tweets when he was in hospital. So he's on some kind of pain drugs and they got deleted immediately. And then the first thing he's had that stayed up is him saying, operation went well. 6 week rest.
Yeah, he's all positive now.
So he's not gone any of it. And again, the thing that
he's not reneged on the statements.
Just to finish, what I wanted to say was, I'm not surprised the UFC done it.
Yeah,
no,
I'm not surprised.
Why I don't want him involved anymore.
Because like,
I want Conor to fuck off and fight a Paul brother and things like that. And
I agree with that.
I'll watch it because it'll be entertaining. Same. Or fight. Pacquiao or whomever else, and let it be what it is. But I don't want the sport element. My argument, I think I said to you, when was it Sigurdsson in the Euros, kind of what looked like he died on the pitch. There was some people questioned the fact that the cameras remained on him. It was beautiful that his teammates made a wall around him. Every news outlet had a photo or footage of him giving the thumbs up or sitting up and talking because it seemed like he hadn't... Honestly, on the pitch, it looked like he'd died. But it seemed like he was okay. No news outlet had an interview with him. after he's come to, because that's not the time or the place. Similarly, even if you go to MMA, Weidman wasn't interviewed in the octagon after he snapped his leg against Anderson. Things like that. But because it's Conor, they can't help themselves.
Also, Conor did look like, as animated and angry as he was, he did seem very lucid. And I'm not saying that doesn't mean to say that you should. Because
but
I think
that's only
because of
what a bell in Conor has been in the past. Again,
I think you should keep
a doctor stoppage.
You should maintain a policy, and I actually agree with that. Not like we disagree with everything, but I do agree, like, you should maintain a policy. And your point is right. Money has seeped into it now so much that we'll make an exception for Conor. Mm. But then look how much he's showing off his Lamborghini boat. But I do believe that that's the reason why, like, too much of a good thing for the sport will hollow it out so much quicker. Yeah. We became fans because it's a wonderfully brilliant sport. Like, people's backgrounds, when you get into it. I remember, who's that homie from Brazil who used to be part of their fucking special forces?
Tiago.
Right, go on.
Paulo Tiago.
Don't get it wrong.
He was part of Bope.
Yeah, Bape. Or Bope, yeah, exactly. And like, he's like Guile from Street Fighter 2. He's like Guile was from the American forces.
It was always amazing one that you were like
the script.
Like Rogan would always say, he's relaxed in the ring in the octagon because the rest of the time he's in the favelas.
He's in the favelas
fighting gangsters.
He's in City of God, for fuck's sake. Yeah. Like, you couldn't write that. But the thing is, to get people on ball quicker, trash talk like Conor does will pull them in. Let's not pretend that it doesn't, because I get drawn into it. Yeah. But it'll burn fans out quicker. It'll burn the sport out. It'll decredit the sport now. Like, for as much sugar-coated goodness it is sometimes watching McGregor have a wonderful charisma, and this is the thing, like, don't think that he doesn't. That's why he's got the following he does. Like, I'm going to throw in the word Hitler here. He's not Hitler. He's got no plans like Hitler, but he's very good. I get bought into Conor. Like, this time round, even the fact that I remember talking to you guys and saying him throwing a punch at a man in a pub is beyond unforgivable for me.
Yeah.
And then when he returned, there's a little bit of me that wants to buy into a bit of the dream that Conor is selling. And I have to be honest about it, because if I wasn't and I kept on saying, oh, he's an idiot.
UFC know that, mate. Mm. Not specifically
you. Of course
they
do. No, exactly.
Obviously, they know that whatever they do, love him or hate him, when he headlines a card, whatever Conor McGregor turns up, fighting-wise, it's always exciting. Mm-hmm. It is always exciting.
Is. That round was a very thrilling fight,
it was.
Wasn't it? Right?
And
he's a good fighter.
He's a great fighter. Yeah.
A lot of people are arguing because two of the judges gave that round 10-8 to Poirier.
Yeah.
I think that was a mistake on their part, because it looked like he'd been knocked down at the end there rather than his leg going. We later saw on the replays, his leg had gone. So I don't think the 10-8s had necessarily
valid. It seemed
valid.
Like more like a 10-9 to me.
I thought it was a 10-9. I thought he was doing good work off his back. He was throwing elbows. I thought he lost comfortably.
Yep.
But I didn't think it was a 10-8. But yeah.
I agree with you. So I think, like, he's done some douche stuff. He really has. And I'm not overly excited to see him. I want to see him fight in the UFC again, of course. I do. I know you don't. But I think there's some people that make good fights.
But again, it's not even, at this point, it's not even an anti-Conor thing. It's an anti-Conor and the UFC thing.
Yeah.
As I said, that's the weird thing. It was previously an anti-Conor thing.
Yeah.
But now it's like, I don't trust the pair together.
Yeah.
But what Chris was saying about...
But we've seen it. We've seen it with Mike Tyson. You know, you see it with so many people that their careers go, they make a lot of money very young and they go off the rails, and then they do at some point almost pull it back. But whatever happens, people tune in to either see him win or lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird one. But the hype and the banter and whatever, it goes back to what we were talking about in the last episode about...
Micro-penis.
Is it funny or is it just nasty?
Oh, right.
And I think Conor was that on this one. Previously, he's been hilarious. And then you go back to Chael Sonnen. His fight talk was just amazing. It was like
he was again, the best smack.
The one that gets me still was when Anderson all of Brazil Silver. Were after him. Silver. Always, all of Brazil were after him. There were death threats. Ben they were worried about him going out there. And then he says, "Look, I've had death threats, you know, but I'm going out to Brazil. Send anyone you want. Just don't send anyone you want back." And it's like, that is a stone-cold line. And they were always pre-written and pre-prepared and stolen from films and all sorts. And he's admitted all of that. But that was good stuff. And the Conor McGregor, who the fuck is that guy? Like, all those bits were golden. But this era
felt like a parody
was
of
him. Yeah, a parody exactly, of himself.
Because, like we were talking about me on the previous drunk cast, yeah. I'm enjoying that. He's doing that. Yeah. He's having to do
playing
that.
But, the character.
But then once you've got 100 million in the account and you've got, imagine like the people that are drawn to you when you've got that much money. Mm. Like I have it now, like used to, and other people. I've got a few quid to chuck about. And you're yes men to me. Imagine what he's got. Like
hangers on.
Yeah. Hangers, absolute Clegg nuts.
Yeah.
Tiger nuts.
But any other MMA stuff you want to talk about? I enjoyed you reining yourself in on the MMA podcast because in our group chat you were hating on Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, really.
And I was ready for that hate to come out. Yeah, and you kind of reined it in a little bit.
That was an emotional response, that was.
Yeah, it was an emotional response at the time. I was tuning in ready because Blake was quite diplomatic and like, yeah, this. And
what's
I was like,
what on our, I don't remember Blake, Chip. Who's Blake?
No, that's on the podcast. What? Blake was chipping. Not in the group message, mate.
Well, not
wasn't
on
in the group message. He was there.
I'm like, genuinely only talking about our group message here, but Stu.
You don't have a group message just you guys and Blake, though, right?
No. It's got Brian Lacey in as well. He's king of the bands. I tell you what, he is the Chris Glasson of MMA.
He's like, I never thought I'd meet someone that understood MMA, was so funny, but would quote like Edward De Bono all the time, like, which is a really smart dude. Do you know what I mean? Like, measured.
Mate, I've never ever seen him get a name wrong.
No.
He's always spot on. He's always
but
spot
yeah,
on.
We're talking about, I guess, what the UFC are hoping to be another superstar. They're priming him, aren't they?
Of course.
Sugar Sean O'Malley to be the next. You know, following that, I guess that, you know, the thing that they've done with Conor and what they've done with Ronda, and I think he's incredible. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you can't necessarily question his abilities at the moment. You know, one loss, but he's refusing to accept that.
I enjoy that. I enjoy a bit of, I broke my leg. It's nothing to do with you.
But, yeah, it was just, I got emotional. I got caught up in it. And he's a big prospect for those that don't understand MMA. This guy is like being tipped to be like the next big thing, and he's so good.
He's charismatic as well.
Yeah,
he's got all of that.
Full thing. He's got star quality, and his opponent got pulled from the fight, injured, just leading up to it. Was he injury or COVID? Either or.
Injured.
And so there was an opportunity for someone to fight him. Now, needless to say, everybody in that division that was a little bit below him wants to fight him because he's
or the, that was a fair bit above him.
Yeah.
Well, because he's a bigger name.
He's the big name.
Yeah.
The UFC swerved all of that and pulled someone from another organisation that had a very checkered career that felt a little bit lamb to the slaughter.
Yeah.
And it felt a bit sad, really, that this kid, but no one was even crediting this kid with anything. And he come in there and he didn't stop coming forward and he pressured Sean O'Malley. He never won a round, but he was brave as you like. He threw the shots that O'Malley were throwing at him were kind of he was taking them, and it wasn't stopping his moving forward.
Do you think Sugar was panicked?
I think Sugar don't like fighting off the back foot.
I absolutely agree. I think it was fun. I think it was fantastic to watch. Like I didn't think the damage absorption was a great strategy.
What?
But at the same time, I've never seen Sugar look so panicked in the ring.
You know my favourite MMA podcast is the Jack Slack podcast.
Yeah.
And then the 100%. MMA fan podcast.
He's great.
But he pointed out something amazing after this was what O'Malley struggled with, and apparently his corner have admitted this now, is his opponent, I can't even remember his name. That's really disrespectful.
Captain Jack.
He kept a switching stance.
Yeah.
And because O'Malley is a stance switcher, if you've got someone who's not switching stance, you know that when you're southpaw, here's what you're going to land. When you're orthodox, here's what you're going to land. If they're switching stances, that doubles and gives you so much more to think about, because you're southpaw, oh, but now he's also southpaw. So it's not the things I would have gone for. And he didn't know that was going to happen. And Jack's like kind of highlight this, and you watch it back and you do see he's kind of overthinking things a bit.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of, all right, he's not what I was ready for. In this stance, I've got my back leg high kick, I've got this, I've got that, I've got that. And in this stance, I've got X, Y, Z. Whereas that went out the window, and he had to kind of have a little bit more time of calculating it all.
We should also say, despite my sort of like observation that O'Malley did look in some way panicked, hence why he was looking at the clock, he also landed a record number of fucking
He won every round comfortably. Also,
but he showboated, and that is what fucked me off.
The Phoenix Suns shit. That was too early.
What annoyed you, but my argument on that was, it's not his fault his opponent changed. And if you tune in for a Sean O'Malley fight, you're expecting some flashiness, some this and some that. So you can't then go, well, as my opponent has changed, I'm going to tone it down. And as we discussed in our other group message, the casuals aren't going to know the opponent has changed. So they're just tuning in to see this guy that's got loads of hype. He's got to do all of that shit, even if it is a bit disrespectful and it's a bit patronising because his opponent isn't even on his level. As we discussed in our three's group message, he tried to get in the octagon with his flip-flops on. When he got in the octagon, he didn't know where he was meant to stand. This is all illustrations of how inexperienced at this level the guy was.
Yeah.
Again, he put on an amazing, resilient performance. Brilliant. But
how much are you into that now? Right. So like let me rewind back to when we first started to watch this, and we'd even see what like fights with the Huntings and Beach Bad Boy. No, that was what's his bollocks, T-O. Wasn't it? T-O. Who is the New York Bad Boy who had an incredible physique? Do you remember him?
Yes. Oh, what's his name?
He wasn't. No, Stu, give us the answer. You got a fucking podcast about it now.
He pops up. He was beefing recently with Dan Hardy.
Still fighting.
No, not he must really. He must be in a wheelchair now. Anyway, what I'm thinking of is that, like, back then, I would love a war.
Stu's cracking up at the idea of a fighter being in a wheelchair. Classic Vance.
I'd love a war.
Yeah.
And I loved the war for many, many years. It's probably only the last 3 years now. I'm starting to not love a war.
But that was it. And that's where we disagreed on this fight as well, was I thought it should have been stopped sooner, because this wasn't a war. This was a one-sided war. This was America against a terrorist threat that doesn't really have any weapons. That's what this was. And, you know,
I'm a barman. You keep shaking a fucking empty can at me.
Oh, bro, that wasn't. I was seeing if there was any booze in it.
Jeeves.
In between the last podcast,
I'm so sorry.
We forgot to take our Polaroids. Yeah. So let's take the episode 2 Polaroid live on episode 3. Can you try and get in shot? Think you're in shot? 3, 2, 1. There you go. That's a good bit of sound, isn't it? A proper Polaroid. But yeah.
Thank you, Sherlock.
MMA, so yeah, I got stopped 30 seconds from the end when he was being unloaded on, but he was. I'm not going to get into it again.
Sean Sheehan of Severe MMA, who's been on the MMA Fan podcast, which is another one. It's probably my real number 2. He spoke on his podcast about 30 seconds is more than enough to do irreparable brain damage. And you'll know from the transfer...
Sorry. There's so many places to go with that. I got confused of who I was going to fire my insults at. Whose mum I was going to insult.
Like, you'll know of the transfer over from being primarily a boxing fan to MMA fan, that the reason boxing has more damage done isn't knockouts, it's the repeated blows to the head and repeated concussions.
Blows?
And that's why, all right. And that's why I was glad it was stopped and thought it should have been stopped sooner, because No one thought O'Malley was going to lose. There was no point that it looked like he didn't get caught badly, anything like that. This was just an extended pummel, pummel, pummel. And it's healthier for a fighter to get knocked out in the first 10 seconds than it is to have 15 minutes of a guy landing 10 punches for every punch that you land. And they weren't, it wasn't, I've got a star. It wasn't Diaz style. Light, touchy. O'Malley was landing hard punches after hard punches.
Yep.
And I think, again, when you and me were watching Brad Pickett's last fight, I was fine with when it ended. And you were like, it's his last fight. Let him fight on. And I understand that, but it is, it's that kind of, well, if he's done, he's done. Regardless of story or what you want to, or going out on your shield, it's like, no, don't let him take even 30 seconds more of blows to the head, because that could be, you know, horrible of what the damage it does.
But definitely put a microphone in front of that guy's mouth, because he's really famous.
Yeah, exactly. That's the trouble of it all. Protect the fighter is the referee's job. It's not the production team's job. And that's where it's a fucking problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, shall we move on from MMA?
Yes.
Oh, please, because I'm bored out of my fucking mind now. Come on.
Three things. I'm going to get eventually onto... Shane McGowan documentary, which will blow your mind, Chris.
It won't. And stop saying blow, because you're saying blow every other sentence now.
Blow isn't even a dirty thing.
It is a dirty word. I'm going to have a blow and go. Stop saying blow. Stop saying the word blow.
You've got your plans for the evening. I've got mine. I was in your toilet.
All right.
Just now, Stu.
Nice one.
And Chris blew me. And I saw...
a signed photograph of
the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Can I just say this is weird? I want to talk. I was offering you in my mind in your toilet money for your signed autograph.
It's not mine.
Listen,
it's from the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, Rocky Horror Picture Show. I want
for anyone who's listening who hasn't just been in Stu's toilet.
You've had a lot of people in there in your toilet.
It's not mine. It's Carol's.
Listen, I want to offer your wife some money for that picture, because it always reminds me of the great times I've around here. Whenever I go and have a piss, I collect my thoughts in your toilet. And I always see that photo, and I'd love to... I was thinking in that toilet, I want to make an offer for
Selective memory. I would say 10% of the times that Chris has had a drink, a piss here, it's not been in your toilet, it's been in your garden. But those times were memorable. But it made me think, have I ever told you about the time I did the time warp on stage with Richard O'Brien?
No, but did you tell my wife when you were standing there?
Yeah, we had a good chat. So let's wrap things up.
let's talk about that, because, I mean... That's incredible.
And it was me, Richard O'Brien, I was reluctant to join him.
Was you on holiday? Where was
I was
this?
Reluctant to join him, but Neil Gaiman made me.
Oh, what a cunt for saying Neil Gaiman.
Throw that in there.
One of the best fucking writers in the country. 100%. I was there with Neil Gaiman.
You'd love the podcast I did with him.
No, I wouldn't.
Honestly, that episode is one of my favourites.
Neil Gaiman's a prick.
How dare you? So this was a weird week. I went on Six Music on Le Mac show.
Yeah, Roundtable.
Yeah, on Roundtable. And I was on with Amanda Palmer. Mm-hmm. And Amanda Palmer...
My throwback Thursday today on Off the Beaten Track was my episode with Amanda Palmer.
A great episode. And Amanda was like, I know you worked with a friend of mine, Saul Williams.
Wow.
So I know you're deep. But she said, most importantly, my husband, Neil Gaiman, has said that you're really good. And I was like, mad. That's a madness.
That's mad.
And she said...
Yeah.
After we finished recording, she said, I'm playing at the Roundhouse on Thursday or Friday, where it was a few days ago away. Do you want to do something? And I was like, yeah, I've got a song called
A Letter
From God to Man.
All right.
I've got a song called
Mr. Sandman.
Yeah. And let's do it. And I got there after her gig had started, so no sound check, no prep. I went to see Gideon Conn, who had supported us a load of times. I was a big fan. He was playing up the road. And then I get there, and I'm like, I let the stage crew know. Within 10 minutes of getting there, they're like, come on. And she introduces me. And I have to say to her band, I'm like, go about this tempo. And I perform A Letter From God to Man. And it went amazingly. Like, I would have expected it to go appallingly, because I'm very
so cool.
prepped. And as we know, I'm very organised. Mm. All went amazingly. And then I'm side stage just watching the rest of her gig, and it's amazing. Her fans adore her. The love. I've played Coco. I love. It's my favorite venue, but the love her fans have for her is a mind blowing connection. But I'm watching it all with her husband, Neil Gaiman.
Oh, that's mind boggling.
And then the encore, they get Richard O'Brien out to perform the Time Walk with them, and me and Neil are watching.
That's insane.
And then Neil grabs me and drags me on stage to do the Time Walk with Richard O'Brien, Amanda Palmer, and her band. And it was just, this was all a night that I was like, I'll pop there after a gig.
Wow.
I'll pop there after I've watched a mate play, and then I'll pop and do this. Absolutely mind blowing.
He's got to be really old, Richard O'Brien.
He was in latex bodysuit and he looked fucking amazing.
Yeah, respect to Richard O'Brien.
I'd rocked up in the clothes I was wearing and did a little gig. Again, I'd got there and I hadn't seen Amanda Palmer before, so I didn't know how glorious her stage shows were. They're this big thing. So I felt underdressed, but it was amazing. But
whatever clothes you're wearing, you've got to imagine filling them full of hair, though, haven't you? That must make you hot. I can't believe that with Neil Gaiman. I saw, you know, these do you see, like, on you're not on Facebook, Pitt, but like you're scrolling through and then you get the masterclass things.
Yeah.
And there was one with Neil. And the things he said in 30 seconds on an ad.
Honestly, you'd love.
I was just like, oh man, this guy's incredible. Like, he was like, how he was like, I don't, you know, there's not always an extreme strict plan of where I'm going. And I was just like, oh, fucking hell. That was such a relief to hear that.
I genuinely loved the podcast we did because it was so relaxed. I turned up at her and Neil's house, which is on like a canal in North London. Neil wasn't there yet. I knocked on the door. Amanda answered the door. Naked or semi-naked, but it's Amanda, so that's not new. That's kind of what she does, because she'd driven home from a gig the night before because she wanted to have a day with their kid and with Neil. So she lets me in, and we have a bit of a chat. And again, because it's Amanda Palmer, it wasn't disorientating at all that she's not got clothes on, because she's known for being very free and open. And then Neil gets home and we start recording, and it's one of the most relaxed conversations I've had, because it was so in their home, in the moment, in the room. And some of the things I learnt off him in that conversation.
He's written like comic books that I remember being in WH Smith's and just reading them on the floor, like, and going through the whole fucking thing. Like Sandman is just like an insane fucking concept. Like, he's so intelligent.
I told Neil this, but I've never read Sandman, because the same girl I talked about who's 18th I ruined gave me Sandman, and then we broke up. So I've had the first book of Sandman for ages, but I've never read it, because I was like, oh, fuck, it's associated to that girl. Yeah. And you talked about on one of the hardcore listens how Counting Crows are one of them bands. Yeah, but it's as soon as anyone's into Counting Crows, I'm like, which girlfriend was that played that? Because that's such a relation to a previous, like an ex or whatever. But and then that leads me on to you've talked. Were you at the Coco gig that Billy Bragg performed with us?
No,
were there next night?
I was there the next night.
It was one that you talked about Billy Bragg with Cunt on Acceptable in the 80s. And again, as I've said about, I'll post about stuff from my music times, because it feels like a different life. And it just gave me flashbacks to how nervous I was to sing a Billy Bragg song with Billy Bragg. And Warren lent Billy Bragg his guitar. So it was a me and Dan gig, so it wasn't even that. But Billy was coming up from like where he lives out southwest, and was like, yeah, I'll come and play. Because in Get Better, obviously, I say, as Billy said, whether you have or you have not a wealth, the system might fail you, but don't fail yourself. So we got him out to
that one?
It's Billy. It's a good one, isn't it? Okay. But we performed To Have and To Have Not, and I did the opening verse. Itch did the middle verse, and then Billy ended it. But Billy playing guitar, Dan had made some synth bits for it. And that is, at that point in my career, I'd never get nervous on stage because it's like, oh, it's cool. But the sound check alone was more nervous than I've been in years, because it was like, I'm not covering a Billy Bragg song. I'm covering it with Billy Bragg playing guitar on it.
Did you got imposter syndrome?
100%. The thing that got me through it was the reason I love Billy Bragg, was it's a bloke who sings in the accent I've grown up around.
Yeah.
Was that comforting? He sings like he sings about the A13. Yeah. He literally sings about the fucking A13. So that familiarity made me feel comfortable. And there's a video of it online, and the video cuts off just after I look up at my mum in the balcony and go, "Mum, did you fucking see that? That was Billy Bragg." Because it blew my mind that Billy's come down to do this for us. Like, he didn't have to. We were like, look, this is probably our last ever tour. Like, we knew at that point this was our kind of farewell tour. And Billy was like, "Yeah, I'll come down." And then we did Get Better afterwards. And to get to say that line that is quoting Billy and to look side stage at Billy Bragg, I genuinely had tears in my eyes as I was doing it. Because I'm like, I'm quoting this guy because I think he's one of the best writers in history.
Absolutely.
And he's come all this way just as a mate, as a favour.
You mentioned, like, we talking to Cunt about him, and I was... he was like most people, he'd heard New England and sexuality. Uh-huh. And I was like, look, he's playing this small venue. You're going to enjoy it. Yeah. Let's just go. And Reading, it was.
Right.
And Cambridge, sorry. And we got there. Went to the wrong venue first. And when we got there, there was a folk band on. And it's just like, I went, "Nah, mate, you want to go to the Exchange?" I was like, "Oh, bollocks." when we did
I just want to quickly say, as you're saying this, your dog walked in. I reached down and stroked its head. Chris reached down and put his hand out for it to lick.
What does that mean? Why are we having a go at me?
Interpret it however you want.
Who's shaking Zavi now?
Who's she
round whose feet now? Mine.
Continue with your
story. I don't know words.
We left there and kind of bought like a bit of Billy had published a couple of books that were available of like his lyrics and stuff. And it was in the lead up to the election, so it was a little bit heavy on politics.
Rightly so.
If you're going to go to a Billy Bragg gig in the lead up to the election, what do you expect?
It's interesting how few of his songs are political, though. Like, the first time I had him on the podcast, he talked to me, I was like, "Everyone thinks I'm a political writer. I write love songs.
Yeah.
That's all I've ever written." The fact that his biggest song says, "I don't want to change the world, I'm just looking for another girl."
Yeah.
It's like, that's the ultimate kind of, look, fuck the politics. It's love songs, but
I went back because I got into him with Workers' Playtime and that's fucking Valentine's Day is over.
You've influenced me there massively. As me and Chris talk about a lot, I've written a load of scripts in recent times and a few are in development, a few aren't. Honestly, I feel the best script I've ever written has got a whole section that is about a tank part salute.
Oh.
And that was because of you bringing it up on our Songs That Make Us Cry. The script is called Leave the Lights On, which is obviously a key part of that. And yeah, that was a song. There's been a few like that, man. When you had a Colin Murray on, and I was always all about... what's my favourite... A Proclaimer song. I've had a drink as well.
Sunshine on Leaf.
No. I was all about the other one, the other love song. I've forgotten the name of it. It's my favorite.
America.
No. Then I Met You.
Then I Met You.
I think that's the best. I brought it up on Colin's radio show, and he was like, "It's not even their best love song, let alone the best love song." And he brought up a Sunshine on Leaf.
Yeah.
As Chris said, and that blew my mind hearing that. And then on Colin's podcast, which is amazing. Do you hear the one he had on with? Oh, man, I'm forgetting everything now. I feel like Chris...
When you messaged me and said about Deacon Blue doing...
Deacon Blue. Dignity. Deacon Blue, yeah. He spoke about them doing Dignity at Tea in the Park.
Oh.
And Dignity has always been a huge song for me because Deacon Blue were the band that my parents would have on in the car on holidays. Mm. And we'd always go caravans either in the UK or France because we weren't rich enough to go on more exotic holidays. And Deacon Blue were always the band, but Dignity was the one that starts... stuck with me. And the podcast he did with Deacon Blue is so beautiful because I don't do a lot of podcasts. Mm. And they
was
talk
it Ricky and his missus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's both of them. And they just talk so honestly. And they played a little bit from that performance at Tea in the Park. And as a Scottish band that have always been kind of under the radar, they're huge but not. They're a weird...
They were fucking massive,
but
mate.
It's weird because they've never been the big number ones type band. They've always been this thing. and to have them go back and play tea. And they talked about how their kids were at that gig and their kids had never particularly thought of their parents as cool.
Yeah.
And then they played tea in the park, and with dignity, he just plays the first bit and hands it over to the crowd, and the crowd sing the whole first verse.
It's amazing.
And it's just the goosebumps. They played a bit of it. I stopped the podcast and got YouTube up immediately to play that, because it was just...
As soon as you messaged me, I was like, right, I was literally in the living room with the kids, and I was like, I'm going to go in the front room for this, so I know what's going to happen.
Tear one out.
Literally fucking bawling my eyes out. It was like...
It's so beautiful.
Because Colin talks about, obviously when he done Alcohol Listening, he spoke about crowd singing.
Yeah.
And he spoke about like Hibs fans singing Sunshine on a Leaf. And the Irish football team, whose name escapes me, singing Hold Me Now with Johnny Logan.
Yeah.
And it's just incredible. There's a Florence and the Machine performance, which I had on the other night, where she's doing Dog Days Are Over, or maybe the first time they were on the main stage as the sun's going down, and she's literally getting the crowd to sing bits.
Yeah.
And it's just goosebumps. But
I once watched Florence headline Bestival, stood next to her dad, and her dad was the most excited person I've ever seen, the proudest person ever. And it was only tarnished by, just before it happened, I robbed the bank saying, we were originally holding this headline slot for Prince, and then it fell through. And Prince is obviously my favourite. I'm sitting there watching Florence, who I adore, who, like, we had gigs together coming up. I think she's amazing. But all the time thinking, imagine if I stood here for Prince.
Fuck's sake, Bob. Dan, do you want to go get an hot dog?
Fucking mood ruiner.
Do you want to open a present?
We've not got what's in the bag yet. Shit, that was what we're going to start episode 3 with. Right. What's in the bag? What's in the bag? What's in the bag?
So, what's so in the to box? Bring it up to
is
speed.
Is it Gwyneth Paltrow's head?
Right.
Oh, I wish.
So your mum.
No, I don't wish.
Your mum buried it in the garden.
No, she didn't. You might. Your family.
You said
might
it was buried in the garden.
No, let's give Pippi's present first.
First of all, it's a present. It's in a Christmas packaging,
yeah.
FYI, which is very nice. There's a Santa popping a hat on a snowman.
Yeah.
A Santa. It's just Santa, isn't it? They're not.
Yeah, there's not many of them.
It's a test. No, a Sainsbury's Jiffy bag.
No expense spared, mate.
Pip, your birthday. It's your birthday. You sparingly, Chris, and it's pubes again. It's once again, it's pubes. Obviously.
Just pubes. But also, I shampooed and conditioned those pubes.
Oh, well done, man.
No, honestly, no expense spared. Alberto fucking Balsam.
Interestingly, and Chris won't know this. Because
you're crying, Pip.
Yeah, I am. Chris won't know this because it was in the network group or WhatsApp, and I know for a fact he did not read those messages. I
cannot be bothered. There's so many. There's so many, and you're all so witty. I can't be bothered.
But I posted in there that the infamous story of me selling relevant to the 10-year anniversary of Interdiction and Distraction Pieces, I infamously sold my beard cuttings from that, which Chris has later admitted he tried to ramp up the eBay things. But the person I sold it to stopped responding, which I now wonder if it was Chris. So I've got them in my cupboard still, and I posted a picture in our network group because it was always a PR thing. It got reported in the NME and numerous other things that I'm selling my infamous beard. It was free press. But yeah, I've still got my beard in a very similar bag. Mine's a Tesco's a Jiffy bag.
Mm-hmm.
Or
technology's come
bag.
On, mate, though. Yeah, technology.
You moved on to Sainsbury's.
Yeah, man. Use sparingly, mate. That's
really
all I'm
nice.
Going to say.
Really
nice. Really is.
It looks clean. You're right. It feels like it has
honestly,
been.
Honestly, I really gave him a good wash today.
Well done, mate.
Yeah. And the best thing is, here's a double win. My girlfriend's been saying, your pubes are out of control.
Yeah.
So I've been able to cut my pubes for a friend's birthday, not to the point where my girlfriend's got to ask, why are your pubes so short?
Yeah.
You know, because if I had to cut them normally, they'd be down to the bone, you know, down to the stalk. I've been able
quite
to do that.
The bone. You
yeah,
didn't
literally.
Need to,
extra
you didn't
finish.
Need to,
and my girlfriend now won't even know that I've cut them for a friend. I haven't given them to my mate, other than the fact that she'll listen to this because she doesn't trust me. Mate.
You're welcome, Molly. You're welcome. My birthday is for everyone.
Alberto Balsam shampoo and conditioner.
The Wu-Tang is for the children.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to see what else is in there?
100%. The fact that that Stu guessed that the first gift was pubes. Oh, hello, it's long.
What? Thank you. Do you want to unwrap this bad boy?
Have you already had the circumcision? Is this your weighty foreskin?
Come on, open this bad boy up.
Yeah.
But also be careful. What am I going to give this to?
Stu, go on to Stu.
Birthday boy.
No, birthday boy. Right. Come on, birthday boy. Birthday boy.
All right. It's lighter than I was expecting. Is it a snake?
Don't be rude.
An eel.
It's an eel. I got this one out of the mud after.
It's some mud.
That is a legitimate find. That's an arc. If you like the detectorists, what are you looking at?
There's some pattern on it. It's a thin piece of metal that has a right angle at the end, but it's got some kind of pattern design on it.
I hope there's a payoff for this, because this is fucking disappointing.
Little update, there's no payoff.
Unbelievable. I can't believe you bigged that up.
It's a bit of metal.
It's a rusty bit of metal.
Oi, you... That's so upsetting, Stu. Look at that. That's a real find in your back garden.
You look
garden,
at the design
is,
work
mate.
On it.
Oh, yeah, it's fucking...
That took me about four hours, you fucking...
Look!
That's a full tank. What? That almost looks like a sword, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't look bent. Like a sword.
Hang on.
It's like a sword.
At what distance can you focus without your glasses? is that better?
Probably part of a bit of a trim from a fucking kitchen drawer.
No,
rubbish,
look at the
mate.
Design. Look at the design.
No, I'm not getting excited about this.
Look at it, feel it. It's quite nice. Exactly. Yeah. Look at that. Doesn't that look Celtic?
Yeah, I think.
What would you say that was, Stu?
It's just a bit of trim. It's just a bit of trim from something.
When you was young, what was that on? That's what I'm brewing to say.
Oh, dear.
I've got a response from the Essex Museum about it.
I can't believe you contacted the museum
cunts.
About this.
No,
shit.
I did because I'd watch it.
I bet
the detectives
really polite about our fucking. I hope they were more excited about this than what we are.
I'd watch a detectorist, and I thought, maybe this
looks like it is no further back from when Stu was putting pegs in a tree to get.
Do you not think
sap to make scrumpy?
But he said, "What a marvellous find!"
Right, and then
said, "We don't need to value it."
Yeah.
What a fucking arsehole, man. You I pulled that straight out of someone's grave but had a crown and jewels in it.
Yeah, it's hard to explain on... Would you like to describe it for
it's
for
about,
the listeners?
I'd say it's about 40 inches long and then you bend it, so it's got an ultimate appearance of 30 inches long.
That's what
and
she
it's
said.
Got, it's got sort of like Celtic decoration all the way down it. Still, did you just hear Stu fart?
I hear a fart as he's weeing outside.
But
in
it's
his
also superly rusted. And if you understand what a sword looks like, that's patronising. Do your listeners know what a sword is and that it's good?
If you're listening and you're not familiar with swords, Google a sword and then we'll take it from
it
there.
It looks like a sword that's a little bit bent. And look, that looks like...
It does not look like a sword. You are pushing it. It does not look like
a
sword that's bent.
Do you know what a tang is? Like a full tang sword? That, to me, reminds me of that should have been a tang of a blade.
I'm leaning more towards Stu and the ultimate disappointment of this. Yeah.
I got that in my back garden, you rude cunt.
I love that Chris has watched The Detectorists, a wonderful series... and got overexcited about a bit of took.
I'm so upset. I even wrapped that in the towel.
If you would have turned up at a community centre for an episode of Antiques Roadshow, someone would have patted you on the shoulder and said, thanks, mate. Go over there and have a cup of tea and a biscuit.
That took me about 4 hours to pull out the fucking garden.
Did you dig
that
up?
Yeah, I digged it up, you cunt. Jesus.
What's the David Dickinson one, Dickinson's Real Deals.
Oh, right.
That is my favourite because you get creeps standing in the background peeping through the lineup.
We've all laughed extensively, right, at my wedding photo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my haircut, which is obviously absolutely disgracefully bad highlighted mullet.
Yeah.
I literally saw this picture the other day and I just thought, in 20 years' time...
This is going to be great for an audio podcast. Keep going.
You need to put it on your Instagram, because in 20 years' time, should we renew our vows...
That is the look you're going to have. David...
David Dickinson.
Describe it a bit.
Like kind of safari two-piece, not too dissimilar from what Chris is wearing, but Chris is wearing camo two-piece. But obviously, I had a really bad peroxide mullet and white suit, and... yeah, and he's got a very similar sort of tan to what I've got at the moment.
You're very tanned at the moment, which brings us on to your holiday.
Oh, okay, right.
To your weekend away. Spoiler or inside MMA type talk. Chris has just gone for a wee, so he can probably hear you though. So he can
look at you.
Is he doing a poo or a wee? That was very strange.
I'm actually quite drunk, man.
Although his willy is quite broken. So what happened on your holiday? So all I know is that we were having some chat in the Pod Bible group, so it's work stuff, and there was a bit of banter going back and forth, and you just said, I've had a fucking shit weekend. A weekend away went wrong. Car broke down. I'll talk to you later.
So I was really looking forward to getting away for a weekend.
With the family.
Yes.
A staycation.
Yep. Glamping, in fact.
Glamping, no less.
In Mersey Island. Not too far.
Really? Anywhere near my dad's caravan? Because my dad's got a caravan in on Mersey Island.
Really?
Interestingly, as I found out of Yilla recently, whose parents have also bought a caravan in Mersey Island, Mersey Island was the most Instagrammed town in the UK in 2020. And I assume that's in relation to the population, percentage of population, but yeah. Anyway, carry on. I doubt you Instagrammed your glamping holiday.
Ooh.
Glamping.
So
tell me about it.
Glamping is basically camping, but
with glamour.
Bejazzled. Without a tent.
Without a tent.
They go. It is a shed with a couple of beds in it and a plug socket.
Now fuck off.
and literally is that. So. Needless to say, having a big estate car and the boot don't work because it's one of the electric ones and the thing got wet, so that was fucked. So I had to load everything in through the back seat. And then off we went. And with Mersey Island, one way in, one way off. And it's tidal as well. So if you're not on and off at a certain time, you can't get on. So it was all timed nicely. And then about a mile from there, in traffic at temporary traffic lights on the approach to the one way in, one way off, my clutch fell out of my car.
Oh, no. On the way there.
Yeah. And now when we speak about them things that we mentioned at the beginning about being emotional and when you're getting emotional and someone says, all right, calm down, you think like, fuck off. Mm-hmm. Like, so at that point, I just thought my weekend away that I've been looking forward to for a long, long time is now going to involve me having to go through the ball ache of finding a relay service and getting towed home and not having a break. So rather than get out and pop the bonnet and stand around and scratch my nuts and sort of look at it like I know what I'm talking about, I got out of the car and I kicked the car and called it a cunt, to which I then got told to not use that language. Yep.
Retract it.
It wasn't a very good idea, was it? Because I dented my car and hurt my foot. In hindsight, fair point.
You've got bad feet as well. And,
yeah, they're not good. They're not good.
They're a bit of a mess.
And so, my brother-in-law...
Horrific, actually.
Yeah, all right. Like, my brother-in-law...
Seriously, it's like a Mel Gibson... No, it's like Mel Gibson in Ransom. Have you ever seen that movie? Best or is it Payback? You know where he gets his toes hit with a fucking hammer?
Best description for a gammy toe ever was cunt's toe, who had an ingrown toenail like mine.
No.
But it was like about a centimetre square inside his massive big toe.
Oh, cunt.
And he called it Kenny. And it really looked like Kenny from South Park.
That's pretty good.
So my brother-in-law came out, pumped the clutch, and went, I reckon you can get there if you go for it. As you all know, I'm a little bit driving Miss Daisy. I'm not a fast driver.
No.
And I was like, I'm sorry.
And less fast and furious, more slow and curious.
Exactly that. So, but this point I was angry and we popped my family into my brother-in-law's car.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on my own and then I put my foot down and then the temporary traffic lights turned to red and the caravanette, camper van type thing in front of me stopped and then I overtook it. Oh, and then made
classless. That is like Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
I was a piece of shit. But my thinking was if I stopped or I broke down, I would cause a lot more grief for all them people.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I bet that camper van was thinking, when this guy passes me, it had better be the ghost of Paul Walker giving me a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, otherwise, this is not acceptable.
I think he was thinking, Maverick, guy with a plan. Like, just, yeah. Almost, yeah, like, give him a round of applause. He didn't. He was so angry. Mm. And then got to the other side, and there was all the people waiting at the green light that couldn't go because I was still coming.
Yeah.
They were all just calling me wankers. Yeah, then I managed to get to the campsite. And then, yeah, it just was the beginning of a weekend that sort of didn't really tick the boxes I wanted it to tick.
Why happened?
Not, why are we not slagging off Pip? Why is that happening?
Yeah, he's gone out for a little jism, hasn't he, in your car? Yeah. In your car? In the back garden?
I don't know what you said there. You just said he's gone for a jism in my car. Did you mean he's gone for a wee wee in my garden?
Exactly that.
Nice one, brother.
But let's make fun of him. What are we going to say?
I don't know. Like, what should we do in them pubes?
Oh, man, let's put him in his drink quick. Hold on. Let me find...
Oh, hang on, he's coming. So, and then...
Going on here.
Nothing. Carry on with that really funny story, mate.
It's not that funny. No. It's miserable.
That's not actually.
So, yeah, I got to the
you got the, there.
To bring you up, I got there.
I was and listening then, as I had a little wee-wee.
I was really, really fucking fucked off because I had to...
fucking book, fucked off, no less.
I had to call a relay and book that in to get home, and that cost me a load of money. And... that's before I even got home. Then I had to spend another £850 on the car. But then I just thought, I'm just going to get pissed. And it was a nice evening. Everyone, like, there was about 10 of us, and we was all sitting outside in, like, camping chairs, having a drink. And I thought, do you know what? I'll worry about it tomorrow. I'm going to enjoy myself. And I did. And then I went back.
How did
in.
You enjoy yourself, mate?
I just drank a lot of lager. And
fair play, mate.
And that was it.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing more, really.
Mm.
Just just didn't feel too bad about myself and thought, why just make the best of it.
Just enjoy it.
And got really drunk. And then I thought, do you know what? I'm really tired now. I'm going to have a nice night's sleep. And then about an hour into my sleep in this very small glamping pod with Carol, my two kids, they all just told me to shush because I was snoring. So I got out the glamping pod and thought I'd try and make a bed in back of my car.
this is rough.
And so I made a bed in the back of my car.
In your broken car.
Yeah, my broken car.
You retreated to your broken car.
Yeah, and managed to get to sleep at about maybe 2 a.m. and then forgot to draw the curtains in my car. And then at 5
a.m.
Obviously,
whoa.
I haven't got curtains
whoa,
in my car.
Whoa. That's the point. Oh, okay. All right.
And then at 5 a.m., it was like, oh, good morning. and so just, yeah, burying my head in a very, very hot car. You know what it's like when you wake up at a festival hungover and the sun's beating through a tent?
Never
very
been
similar
there.
To that.
It's the worst.
Tried to style it out, and then at 7 a.m.
Imagine you shoving your face down the side of the seat.
In between a sofa and biscuit. Sun.
Really horrible.
Pip says, imagine it. Me and you have lived it.
And then...
Pip, have you ever woke up in a festival not under perfect conditions?
Yeah, 100%. I used to break into Glastonbury, you break into Reading, sometimes with a tent, sometimes without a tent.
So how would you wake up? What were the results?
It's just a sweaty mess. Just a sweaty mess in a tent. I once had one, right, where I'd gone to Reading and Leeds, and I was there with a girl from college who I quite fancied, and we'd kissed at one point. And then as a surprise, 2 nights in...
You'd ordered a boat?
No.
Oh.
Her boyfriend from college came.
Hey,
watch out.
No.
So the three of us shared a tent. So I was laying there in a tent with this girl I fancied and thought I was in love with. I wasn't. As she and her boyfriend shared a sleeping bag and had a nice little cuddle and went to sleep. And that was... arguably the worst night festival.
No wonder you
ever had.
Did you have an angry wink?
No.
No wonder you're a successful musician.
I got
when
up,
that happened to you.
I got up early and went to the van's tent and saw a band called the Suicide Machines, which was exactly what I needed at that point. And absolutely connected with them and loved the Suicide Machines for a couple of years. But yeah, brilliant. I've slept.
Oh
in
my
a
god,
tent
you went to a festival and then oh, that is you loser. So, like no one who should listen to this podcast should be involved in that. That is so embarrassing for you.
So after Shoot. Burying my head for about 2 hours, I decided at 7 a.m. ish, I was just going to get up, and so I had a pair of shorts on. My flip-flops were outside my car.
All right, keep talking.
And as I got out of the car, a couple of the other people we were staying with had just kind of got up and were sitting outside their pods.
They all threw up.
Like, just having a cup of tea. And then they all looked very confused as they saw me coming out of my car feet first. And then got up and just started walking. And they were like... Did you sleep in there? I was like, yep, and just carried on walking. And they went, where are you going? I went, see. And one of them like must have done that. I think one of them's wives must have been giving him the kind of Gary Lineker wink and gone, go and check on him. Oh. And I just carried on
he
walking.
He might not come back from the sea.
And just walked into the sea.
I like long walks on short
really
beaches.
I didn't really have a plan. I just kept walking. And I did just think, do you know what?
I didn't really have a plan. We'll just see how this pans out, I guess.
And it really was. And I just thought, do you know what? If I don't come back, I'm going to save everyone 800 quid. And like...
And mate, you know what? Mate, they're still going to have to get home. they're not just going to restart their lives in Mercy.
And deal with your fucking funeral.
Fucking hell. Take a move in with your dad. And like...
My dad and Yilla's dad.
Oh, fucking hell.
But yeah, and so as it happened, it was bracing and hangover curing, and it woke me up. And then it was.
There's nothing like that, man.
I can imagine Stu stumbling out zombie like.
It really like, was.
Is everything all right? See. All right, mate.
It was exactly you like good. That.
Say brains.
Check on him.
Fucking surfer zombie.
Oh dear,
mate. There's nothing like that though. Like we did Carla and Dan's wedding. Carla,
clarify. Sorry, it weren't Point Break or anything cool. It looked fucking shocking.
Carla works for Katie Piper Foundation. Mm-hmm. Good friends of those guys. Wicked charity. And Carla and Dan got married. Randomly in this, and well, not randomly, southwest in a castle. And in the morning, we all went for a swim. And we had really fucking
in the moat.
In the moat, we had got absolutely smashy wonko. And to get into that ocean in the morning, in like the fresh surf by all these crashing rocks, it was kind of like Cornwall way.
Oh, right, the ocean.
Like Mousel,
right,
and near the Lizard. I'm not making these words up, this isn't like bands. And it was insane. And like from being fucking deadly hungover to wide awake and absolutely feeling right as rain, nothing will do that to you. Like the cold.
I love it. I've banged on about the cold showers before and all that. And the way Tim Clare summed it up perfectly on the podcast, like Ed got into him, he's a writer. And he said, I'll tell you this, I've never felt worse after a cold shower. Like, it's not always the absolute solution, but I've never felt worse afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, that's clasping at straws.
It always
though,
improves
isn't it?
In some way.
Yeah.
And again, it's that. It's like, it might not solve it, but it's always, you feel better in some level.
Absolutely.
And it's the same with the sea. Yeah,
the
just going
with,
in there.
Maybe the police putting your front door for about 4 a.m. That wakes you up and gets you very, very clear. Thinking with a lot of clarity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should have deleted those files, basically.
Shall we end this one and do one more?
Yeah.
One more for the road. We're gonna juice this one up, aren't we,
so
guys?
Let's have a look what we're going to talk about in the next one. Let me think. I want to talk about Crock of Gold, the Shane McGowan.
I want to talk about why you've got the word, the initials BDT on your Instagram profile, Pip.
Well, I may not go into that. I want to talk about top five TV show character names, because me and Stu did that episode of Hardcore Listening, and Chris wasn't there, and I want his input.
Best Prezzies.
Yep, that's a good one. Music and TV from the past year. if anything comes to mind. I know
films, have we?
No, we've not discussed films at all.
No, we haven't.
So, yeah.
Best pornos from 2021. All those crazy Pornhub. I was in lockdown with my stepbrother. We're going to get into them on the next episode.
Do you want to make the joke about completing Pornhub again? You make it on almost every episode of Hardcore Listing. So, do you want to?
Cum shot.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There you go. That was part three. That means part four's coming. And that might be a worry to any of you who feel that we're enjoying ourselves too much at this stage. But honestly, it's a joy as ever. We end part four with a traditional whiffing game. So you're going to enjoy that. Yeah. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.